We're on this morning with David Fowler from Associated Bank. David, before we get going this morning, tell people again what you do there at Associated.
Good morning, Steve. I'm involved on the capital market side, so we help clients of the bank manage currency risk, interest rate risk, and commodity risk.
You're our Brexit expert, and there's some Brexit news that's been happening after the last couple of days. I know yesterday the Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, said that the European Union must prepare for the possibility that talks with Britain over Brexit, that a deal may not be able to be reached. What's that going to mean, not only for the European Union, but for Britain?
Well, I think we're talking about kind of a continuation of the issue that we've had for quite a while, which is that, you know, the British are looking for a deal that is very much a kind of a la carte, piece by piece. The European Union is looking for a deal that's much more holistic. If you throw in the COVID situation, both in the European Union and Britain, and we have this, you know, terrible witch's soup of competing and conflicting priorities. So I think, you know, it may be a case where, you know, which is going to be the most important? Do we focus on COVID or do we focus on Brexit?
So the timeline looks like it might be December before there's some sort of agreement, or at least the idea of an agreement. A lot can happen between now and December, right?
It can. And frankly, December is going to be way too late. You know, I was reading something just this morning, because as you know, Northern Ireland has got a completely different regime than the rest of Britain, in that Northern Ireland is remaining part of the European Union from a trade point of view. Not from a political point of view, from a trade point of view. And they're waiting to get information from the UK customs authorities on what they have to build in the ports in Belfast and Larne. You know, they need to build new facilities to be able to take, you know, to process all the new documentation, all that kind of stuff that's going to happen on road freight in particular. So, you know, they don't know what they're going to do. They're trying to get some kind of clarity from the government because they physically have to build infrastructure. Originally, the deal that was struck last year was that if by the end of June no real progress had been made, then everyone would go back to their corners and start preparing for basically a no-deal Brexit. We're now past that day just, and there's talk that they might try to extend it into October, but most people are thinking that's going to be way too late for both UK and EU businesses to be able to deal with whatever documentation or kind of regulatory changes that appear. So we are getting to a bit of a crunch time.
So, David, if you're an investor sitting here in Chicago or in the Midwest, an international investor, what should be the play here? How should you be preparing not only your portfolios for some of this, but what guidance should you be looking at? What should be the play?
Well, I think, you know, from an overall point of view, we have enormous uncertainty. And, you know, this applies to everything, you know, putting Brexit to one side. There's enormous uncertainty in the world. We've had, you know, obviously we have the COVID-19 issue that's, you know, across the globe. Governments have responded across the globe by increasing money supply tremendously in order to just try to keep their economies afloat. It looks like, you know, more and more economies will have to continue to do that. And, you know, how are they not only going to continue doing that, but more importantly, what's going to happen when, you know, they can start looking at a more kind of stable future? How are they going to manage to finance all this expansion? So I think, you know, while it's uncertain now, I think it's uncertain going forward as well. And in times of uncertainty, I think prudence is always the best case. We've talked about this before quite a few times, but really I think at this stage for people, you know, I think you have to be very cautious in what you do. You know, if you're an importer or exporter, you know, I would think that, you know, covering your foreign currency exposures, whether receivable or payable, you know, as they appear, you know, making sure that you, you know, locked in the rates that you need in order to make your business work properly. If you have, you know, a large amount of floating rate debt, you know, looking to go, you know, converting some of that into kind of fixed rate debt via an interest rate swap or some type of vehicle like that, it just makes sense to try to lower the risk overall in what you're doing. And to be prudent and to be vigilant. And, you know, it's hard to say to somebody, you know, this is going to end on X date. We really don't know. With that uncertainty, I think we have continued to be very cautious and, you know, play it a little bit close to the wind.
I've seen some analysts to say that the divorce between the UK and the European Union is an experiment in deglobalization. And when you throw in COVID-19, it makes it even more so. How do other countries view this, including the U.S.? Because I know we've been thinking about doing some trade deals with the U.K., but we also have an administration that has been very staunch in its Make America Great, the America First plan, the idea that globalization is bad. Where is that experiment heading, do you think?
I think to an extent, there may be over time a kind of readjustment of trade flows. So we may see some manufacturing moving from, you know, some locations where they are right now to other locations. But it's difficult to change any of these, you know, trade patterns very quickly, because obviously there's a lot of infrastructure, there's a lot of logistics, there's a lot of things that go into it. You know, if you have a factory right now in Lahore, Pakistan, that's manufacturing your product, you know, it's difficult to say, okay, tomorrow we're going to start doing it in Lamont, Illinois. You know, this is just, it's something that can happen over time. And I think over time you may see, you know, people nibbling a little bit in reallocating how they produce across the globe. But I don't think globalization is, this is not something that's over. I think it's going to change a little bit. And, you know, all these things change over time. And hopefully it'll become a little more, we might see a little more evenness and flows across the globe. But I think that it's not going to be something that we can do in a hurry. Just the infrastructural limitations, the raw material limitations, and the other, you know, labor, other factors limitations are just going to force us to basically deal with what we have in the best way that we can do it right now. I think for Britain, you know, you have a situation where, you know, you have a government that's pursuing basically an England first policy. And I say that, I stress England rather than UK, because some of the policies they're looking to do, particularly in Brexit, are not ones that are widely agreed with in Scotland and to a lesser extent in Wales. And certainly Northern Ireland's got its own deal completely. They've been kind of left over to one side in this whole process. And I think what you're going to find is that, as you know, I was listening to something just recently, they're talking about unemployment levels in the UK now going back to the levels of the 1980s. And for those of you that weren't alive or don't remember, in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, we had three-day weeks with power cuts, there were shortages of coal, there were massive strikes, and the UK economy cratered. And, you know, it looks like it, with rising unemployment and rising government expenditure, you're going to have these massive deficits, not only in the UK, but in other countries too. And how are countries going to deal with this? And I think that's going to be the primary focus on what's going to happen and how trade flows will change. The ability, I think, for governments to deal with both the current situation that we're in and also how they deal with the next phase of how events progress, both in terms of, you know, health issues and economic issues, and how they deal with these rising deficits. That, I think, is going to be the trigger. And the countries that deal well with that are the countries that are going to do well economically. And, you know, you'll see, you know, as being attracted to those countries, their currencies will appreciate in value. And those that don't will probably find the opposite. And certainly, reading something just this morning in the from one of the banks in London, you know, they're talking about sterling becoming like an emerging country currency, which is quite a thing to say about a currency that was at one time the main currency in the world.
You know, as we look at the global economy, it's not all doom and gloom. As a matter of fact, as the quarter came to an end, we saw lots of the markets doing well. In the U.S., things were up. We've watched the dollar, although it's been volatile, move up as well in some situations. What has surprised you most about the last quarter and the gains that we've seen, even with the pandemic?
Well, I think the most surprising thing is how quickly things came back. So, you know, we saw that initial drop in, you know, March and early April. And, you know, there were truly appalling figures being reported by the government. And we saw this in the stock market, and we saw any number of indicators. The rapidness of the recovery to kind of really where we were when we started, I think it's been, you know, really staggeringly good. The question is going to be, what do we do from here? And I don't like to be, you know, always the kind of the naysayer, although I'm an economist by trade, so that's our job. But it's hard to see what's going to happen to push markets forward to the next kind of leap up. Now, it's also, I think, quite likely that what we will see is a pattern emerging of kind of low volatility while people reassess what's going on, because there's so much uncertainty and so little certainty that I think what we're going to see, and I think this is what we've been seeing in the last couple of weeks, where the market will go up a little bit, it'll come back a little bit, it'll go up a little bit, back a little bit, but kind of hovers in this kind of range. So when we look at the Dow, you know, it seems to be kind of very steady around kind of 25,000, 26,000. When we look at, you know, the euro against the dollar, it's very steady between kind of 112 and 114. And I think things like that are just, we're just in a holding pattern. I don't think we're, unless something really disastrous occurs, I don't think we're going to see another move like we saw at the end of March. But I think what we could see is a gradual move, maybe lower, maybe a little higher, but nothing too great. Certainly not until we get through the election season here. And then, you know, obviously things may change a bit from that. But between now and November, assuming that we don't have a major issue from the, on the health standpoint, I think we're going to be kind of in a holding pattern.
David, nice chatting as always. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Well, the easiest way to always get us is if you call the Trade Room, which is 866-524-8836. Or you can always email me. My email is david.feller, that's david.feller, at associatedbank.com.
David, thank you very much. See you next time.
It's a pleasure, Steve. Thank you.